Welcome to Poppyland Songs, Life on a Cliff Edge, written and produced by me, your host, Bertie. Poppyland Songs is supported using public funding through Arts Council England.
There upon the cliffs you'll find Poppyland, where it all began.
Episode 7, Northreps.
For those who lived and died in Poppyland.
Hello again and welcome back to Poppyland Songs, Life on a Cliff Edge. So if you haven't listened to any previous episodes and want to know what this is all about, then I might suggest you have a listen back. You can find it in the usual podcast places or via my website, Bertie Bowe, that's BERTIEBOW.com. So my name is Bertie, and I am a musician and composer from North Norfolk, and I have been collecting stories, past, present and future, from this tiny part of the world known as Poppyland. The stories I gather have been the inspiration for a song cycle celebrating life on a cliff edge. Poppyland Songs was initially inspired by a collection of journals found in the house where I grew up in Sidestrand, North Norfolk. They were written by my great-great-aunt, Kit Hood, and document the rural lives of her neighbours over 100 years ago. John Gray of Sidestrand is the most frequent contributor, a storyteller with a sense of humour and a love of song. It was 9 years ago in September 2014 when the first idea of Poppyland Songs, Life on a Cliff Edge was born. I was about 6 or 7 weeks pregnant and I could never have guessed where it was going to take me over the next 9 years. A year later, in 2015, with my newborn baby, we did our first concert in Sidestrand Church. But I didn't stop there. I kept gathering stories and, in fact, am still always delighted to receive an email or a message with a new memory to add to this social musical tapestry that I've been weaving. So if anything in this episode triggers a memory for you, then please do get in touch. You can email me at poppylandsongs@gmail.com or find me on social media at Bertie Bowe or visit my website and you can contact me there. I don't think that Poppyland Songs is ever going to stop, because whilst there are people living here and having experiences and memories, I will keep gathering them and being inspired to write more songs. So, quite a bit of time has passed for me since I recorded the previous 6 episodes. At the beginning of 2023, I was extremely grateful to be awarded a second grant from Arts Council England to continue writing and working on Poppyland Songs. This has enabled me to take the live show on the road and bring the band along too. Together we have performed Poppyland Songs all around the east of England, from Cambridgeshire to Lincolnshire, west, north and south Norfolk. I'm still waiting to go to east Norfolk. In late September, we performed at Northreps Village Hall. I was particularly excited about this performance for a number of reasons. The old Northreps Village Hall was where I did my first ever performance on the violin, encouraged, forced, by my granny Verily. I believe it was a harvest supper, so it seemed to fit that the next time I would perform in the village, 30-something years later, that it would also be heading into autumn. Northreps is the parish that lies behind Sidestrand and Overstrand. Although it is not quite on the cliff edge, it is very much a part of the Poppyland community. Kit's journals frequently mention the parish. We heard all about Ted Summers of Northreps, a blacksmith and employer of John Gray and allegedly a smuggler. And then, of course, Sally Bean.
Oh, Sally Bean, for some baccy and gin, will you look out for me tonight? Old Chuck's on the prowl with his black curling cow, we don't want no trouble tonight. Oh, Sally Bean, for some baccy and gin, will you look out for me tonight? If the officer comes with his deadly young guns, shine bright your warning light.
So let's hear some other stories about Northrop's from Kit's journals.
There was a very old man down Northrop Street. Close on 70 he were. They call him Old Draper. And he used to work for Edmund. He used to sing songs at the public house. I once went in for half a pint and he was singing a song. And old Stoney, he say, that was the nicest little song what I ever have heard. It had a chorus. The three-footed stool was the chief of my store, in the neat little cottage with the ground for the floor, in the neat little cottage with the ground for the floor, in the neat little cottage with the ground for the floor.
Gray's mother worked at one time for Ole Hudson at the foundry at Northrop's. He did a big business and his works were in the yard before you get to the present forge. He employed a lot of men and had three forges going at a time, and the single men boarded with him.
He was a very kind old man to poor people. He took one young fella named Leader to live with him. That had no belongings and only one arm, and he made him an iron hook to hold his fork with. Mrs. Hudson was a wonderful, kind, gumptious old lady. Once I sat in a chimney waiting for my mother. That was very cold, and I was very small, and the poor old lady was baking sausage rolls, and she gave me one.
At one time, John lived at Pond Farm.
In those days, it was two cottages, one in Side Strand, the other in Northrep's. Grey had the Northrep's one, and old John Pyle the other.
Pond Farm is the house at the bottom of Hungry Hill. Hungry Hill is a hill, with a single-track road that runs through the middle of it that will take you from Side Strand to Northrep's. Unless you fancy crossing the fields, which is what I used to do as a kid. At the bottom of the hill, the road cuts into the land with the fields rising up either side. Hungry Hill would most likely have gotten its name for having poor soil at some time in the past. Although, according to Kit's journal, someone named Brown ruined himself growing flax at Southrep's, where he lost £100 a year there, but made £100 at Hungry Hill. At the top of the hill, the winds blow across it. The trees up there have that dramatic wind-blown shape. You can also find Shrieking Pits off Hungry Hill, which I tell the shocking story of in episode 4. These days, in springtime, there is a stunning view of yellow rape as far as the eye can see. A few months ago, I was on Stephen Bumfrey's BBC Norfolk show, talking about the project and upcoming concerts. The next day, I received an email from someone who had heard the show. It turned out that their mother was born at Hungry Hill in 1920, one of 16 children. Only 8 survived. The others died at very young ages. Apparently, Mrs. Hood was a name often spoken of by their mother and grandparents, held with great respect and some fondness. They felt that Mrs. Hood had shown that large family some kindness. They remember the house, with no electricity, just oil lamps, and Granny shouting, "Careful, mind that lamp, stop jumping about." They also remember trudging across the footpath in the dark to catch the train back to Cromer from Side Strand. That's right, Side Strand Holt train station only existed between 1936 and 1953, and the station was behind the houses not far from the coast road, so the walk from Hungry Hill would have been along the narrow footpath that ran through the fields. The old train track has been filled in now, but when I was a kid, you could follow it a good way along from the back of the houses. That bit was cut down into the ground with great high overgrown sides. Well, high to an 8-year-old, they towered over me. I'd ride my bike down there and often give myself the heebie-jeebies. At night, I would hear what I wondered might have been a ghost train passing along those old tracks. It also transpires that these grandparents from Hungry Hill were Greys too. As yet, we're not sure if they were related to John and his wife Alvina, John and Alvina had 7 children, and John had a brother, so it is possible that they are the same family. Though I have been told before that there are at least 2 Gray families in the area. The names were Sid and Gladys Gray, so if there's anyone else out there that knows them, get in touch. They also went on to say that one Easter in the late 1920s, all the children attending the Sunday school were given an egg cup by Mrs. Hood. I have also since heard that Mary Blythe, who was Kit's companion and lived with her at Garden Close, apparently ran a children's choir out of their house. So we know that Kit lost her husband, Ivor, in the war and her son when he was just 12. But it sounds that despite those personal tragedies, she continued to care deeply about her community and helped where she could.
I fell in love atop Hungry Hill, with the sweet scent of yellow, the sure smell of spring. It calls me to stop, and it calls me to fill up my eyes to the brim, to breathe it all in, let my heart slow down, let my mind be still, let my breath be
That was Hungry Hill. Listening to this song now, surrounded by falling autumn leaves, I'm taken back to the day the song was birthed. Some songs happen like this, a very sudden moment of inspiration with a very short labour, they burst out of me. In this case, I was driving over Hungry Hill. It was late April, maybe early May, and the fields were truly glowing gold. The sun was bright, and there was an all-encompassing feeling of spring around me. The world felt fresh, alive, hopeful. It seems in stark contrast today in mid-September. The backcountry roads are lousy with silt and stones washed down from the fields by the huge rainstorm yesterday. Swathes of twigs and leaves have been dragged down from the trees by the voluminous high winds. Autumn is coming. I noticed the seasons far more acutely here compared to my years in London. I simply spend so much more time witnessing them. The colours, the smells, the betwixt times when the season is changing, the cycle is moving, the wheel is turning.
ring of fanfare to the new storm coming in. Phone lines quiver in anticipation. A chorus of humming jubilation. A 12-string harp played on the wind. Empty rooms and empty windows. I've put my best dress on. I'll put on a show. Perfect imperfection. It's all I've ever known. I'm turning, turning, turning. And each time round I'm learning. These days always come to an end. So I keep turning, turning, turning. On an ancient phrase, scribbled schemes upon white canvas skies, a song to never lose away, a triumphant chorus, homeward bound elation, a celebration of one more day. I'm turning, 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 and each time round I'm learning. Days always come to an end. So I keep turning, turning, turning. Each time round I'm learning. These days always come around again.
What
That was Turning from my new album, Tilt. Inspired by the seasons and composed over 12 months, taking inspiration from each season here in Norfolk. I took field recordings over the year and wove them into the music. I planned to release the album in 2024, but it had its first outing this summer. I recorded a special mix which was played on a loop as a sound installation at Raveningham Sculpture Trail. If you visited the trail, mine was inside a beautiful hazel bower where you could sit and watch the sheep in the neighbouring field. Their bleating and the surrounding birdsong combined with my composition to create a lovely surround sound experience. Back in 2021, I was seeking people to share their memories of Poppyland. I had learnt so much of the past residents through Kit's journals, but I wanted to hear from those who were still alive and living here. This put me back in touch with an old primary school friend called Linz Holland. We had both attended the Belfry School in Overstrand in the 1980s, when Mr. Tim Bennett was the headmaster. I go into more detail about the old Belfry School in episode 3. The old school building on the Coast Road, which is now the amazing arts and music centre run by Keith and Lucy. It was built in the early 1800s by two friends, Anna Gurney and Sarah Maria Buxton. They had been teaching the local children at their home for some time and strongly believed that all children should have an education, so they built the school. With some amazing foresight, they also ensured that the building and its concept, being a place of education for the local community, would continue in perpetuity, preventing its development into holiday homes or any other shady business. Anna and Sarah also come up in episode 5, Misty Visions, as it is believed by some that they occasionally return to visit their legacy. Anna and Sarah Maria were quite the fascinating pair. Cousins through marriage, Anna was disabled by polio at a young age, so she was wheelchair-bound all of her life. After Sarah Maria's mother remarried, she went to live with her cousin Anna and her mother in Northreps. And when Anna's mother died in 1825, the two women, now in their 30s, moved into Northreps Cottage together and were known as the Cottage Ladies. And they describe themselves as partners. Perhaps a subtle yet defiant public declaration of their devotion to one another. A couple of spinsters, one disabled, living together. They were just very good friends. After all, Queen Victoria didn't believe women were capable of anything beyond friendship together, so just good friends. A side note on this, my step-grandfather, Paul, and his significant other, John, also used to refer to themselves as the partners. The two women were educated and had strong beliefs and deeply cared about their community and politics. Anna didn't let her disability slow her down. Although her family wealth would have protected her to some degree, she must have experienced a huge amount of prejudice over her life. She was highly educated and spent her life dedicated to a number of causes, including the education of children and the fight against slavery. Also concerned for the safety of those at sea, she purchased a Manby mortar. This is an apparatus used to fire a line to a ship in peril from the beach. And on particularly perilous days, she would be taken down to the beach where she could oversee and instruct on the use of the device. Anna and Sarah had 19 years together at Northreps Cottage before Sarah Maria died. And despite her disabilities, Anna managed to travel abroad. She was also focused on geological research along the Poppyland coast. I know how hard it must be for wheelchair users to access the beach now, so I can only imagine how determined she must have been to continue her research, as well as instructing with the Manby mortar. In 1845, Anna became the first woman to join the British Archaeological Association. She also studied Danish, Swedish, and Russian literature. When she died in 1857, she was buried alongside Sarah Maria Buxton in Overstrand Church, and the inscription that she chose for their joint tombstone reads, "They were partners and chosen sisters, knit together in the love of God, and heirs together of eternal life through Jesus Christ." And their initials are on the front of the Belfry Centre building, a beautiful symbol of their legacy and devotion. So, back to my friend Linz. Linz is a mum of five and lover of art, photography and writing. She has lived all over the world, but first arrived in North Norfolk when she was 6 years old. Her dad got stationed to RAF Coltishaw and bought them a house in Trimmingham. Trimmingham is the next village along from Sidestrand. We used to get the school bus together to Overstrand. She lived in Trimmingham until she was 17. And her favourite spot was the old railway bridge behind her house in Trimmingham, the same one that ran behind mine. A beautiful memory for her was when her dad, who was in the RAF, used to tell her the times of when the Sea King or Wessex rescue helicopters would be training, and she used to sit on the clifftop and watch them and would always get away from the one hanging from the ladder. Sometimes they would fly in lower and all shout and wave hello. One of my favourite memories of hanging out with Linz was roller skating in the car park of Sidestrand School Hall in the holidays when the school was closed. It was always a bit scary and we felt like total rebels, as we knew we probably shouldn't be there. But in a place like Sidestrand, you had to find your kicks somewhere. Linz has always had a passion for creative writing, and when she heard about my project, she was inspired to write a poem about her childhood here. I took her poem and turned it into a song. This is called Lighthouse Lights.
From Sheringham to Munsley, poppy land runs beside the North Sea and calm rolling fields. A pier, a lifeboat, villages quaint and little gems that remain concealed. Long walks on the beach and along the cliff top, through fields of poppies and corn. Dogs running ahead with a wave to a friend, past a church standing empty forlorn. The sound of the sea on clear starry nights, looking out of my window at the lighthouse lights. Cassiopeia and Orion turn above our heads. The chug of the tractor as the day begins, the cry of the gulls as the boats come in. Everything changes, yet everything stays the same. Morning alarm, the sunrise and skies, birds on and tractors rumble by. Time for school and the bag on my back, quietly waiting for the bus to arrive. Roller skate adventures till the street lights come on, riding bikes on the narrow back roads. Strawberry picking and sweet raw peas, and potatoes going past by the lawn. On clear starry nights, looking out of my window at the lighthouse lights. Cassiopeia and Orion turn above our heads. The chug of the tractor as the day begins, the cry of the gulls as the boats come in. Everything changes, yet everything stays the same. Turn you to stone, don't you know?
looking out of the window at the lighthouse lights, Cassiopeia and Orion turn above our head. Looking back on my childhood, what a wonderful time. Memories held lovingly in hand, my family, friends, and this beautiful place I call home.
So, has this episode sparked a memory for you? Let me know what you think about anything you have heard today, and please share this with anyone you might know who is interested. The best way to receive updates is to join my mailing list via my website. That's bertiebow.com. I do not send out many emails, so don't worry. Just important ones with dates of concerts or updates on the project. In the next episode, I'll introduce you to the final journal of Kit's. This one is a bit different to the previous three, dated the 28th of July to November the 7th, 1914. There is only one thing to be concerned with. Kit's unique perspective is fascinating. She comments on what she is seeing out at sea, the influx of soldiers, what she is hearing, rumours from the community, and a direct line to London through her brother, the MP Sam Hoare. We will also meet Pat, Jill and Martin, three other collaborators who I spoke to about their lives in Poppyland. The final show of the 2023 Poppyland Songs Tour is happening on the 19th of November at Sheringham Little Theatre. So if you're listening before then, book your tickets now. I'm going to be joined by the whole band for this last concert of the year, and it's going to be absolutely spectacular. Also, if you'd like to hear any of the songs from Poppyland Songs again, then you can purchase the album from me through my website, bertiebow.com. Or if you don't own a CD player, then you can, in fact, listen to them online, either stream them via Spotify, or you can also purchase and download the digital version online from the usual places. If you're listening to this as a podcast, then I would love it if you would leave me a review, preferably a 5-star one, because apparently it helps give reach to the podcast and helps other people see it. Also, share it with anyone you know that might be interested in Poppyland Songs and the stories of people from North Norfolk. That's all for today. Bye! Poppyland Songs was hosted, written, produced and recorded by me. It's a one-woman show.